Good afternoon, everyone. It is March 1st, 2016, and this is the House Committee on Rules. We are going to start, I'm going to open a public hearing on both 1501 and 1599A. And I'll have Robert Taylor, Sammy Alloy, and Sal Peralta come up.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1501 establishes July 1, 2015 as date for determination of total number of registered voters in state for purpose of maintaining status as minor political party through the 2018 general election. Senate Bill 1599 establishes July 1, 2015 as date for determination of total number of registered electors in state for purpose of maintaining status as a major political party through the 2018 general election. Senate Bill 1501 comes due with 29 aye votes from the Senate, no revenue, no fiscal. Senate Bill 1599 comes due with 28 aye votes, no revenue, no fiscal.
Great, thank you. Whichever order you would like and whichever bill you want to start with.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Robert Taylor. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State. I'm here to express the Secretary of State's position in support of both 1501 and 1599. The history behind this bill, both of these bills in the Senate, is as follows. 1501 was originally introduced to fix a typo in the Oregon Motor Voter Bill that was passed in 2015. The intent of that section in the bill that had a typo was to hold all political parties harmless through the 2016 election, which was the first election cycle for which motor voter would be in effect. And so it was designed to specifically geared towards a calculation in the law that would have kicked in that would affect some parties in that 2016 election. There was a bit of a misfire, and it referred to the wrong subsection of the law. So we tried to correct that to in 1501 as introduced so that the legislature's intent would be fulfilled. Over in the Senate, there was some discussion, however, about if you're going to hold political parties harmless in 2016, the first election cycle, then perhaps you should also hold them harmless in 2018 or perhaps 2020 to give more time for Oregon Motor Voter to be in effect and give the legislature a little more experience with the law and the political parties a little more experience with the law. And the Secretary of State's perspective on that was it's certainly the legislature's prerogative to draw that line wherever they want. They can draw that line as of the 2016 election, the 2018 election, or the 2020 election, but from the Secretary of State's perspective, the most important thing is treat all the parties the same. All major and minor parties should have the line drawn at the same place. And in the Senate, they thought 2018 was a good compromise, and that's why the bill comes to you with the unanimous vote of the Senate. And the bills before you today, 1501 and 1599, contain that compromise through the 2018 election.
Great, thank you. Hi, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sammy Alloy. I am the Legislative and Policy Director for Oregon Working Families Party. Thank you so much for having me. The Working Families Party urges you to support SB 1501. Passing this bill in this legislative session is critical to the survival of our party. Robert just told you the history of the Scrivener's error. So for us, our top priority is amending that error. And if we are unable to do that in the 16th session, the Working Families Party will be in peril. We have currently 11,300, give or take, voters. That's plenty of voters to qualify as the motor voter bill would have intended. But without passing this bill, we certainly would not be able to keep pace with the influx of new motor voters. You know, if we fail to pass this bill, our 11,000 voters may lose their party of choice. The bill has since been amended to include a more universal fix for all minor parties through the 2018 election and is moving together with Senate Bill 1599. We think that's the right choice. Obviously, for us, the most urgent thing is to amend this typo, but we do believe that a diversity of parties is critical to having a healthy democracy, and so we do support the compromise. The WFP supported Motor Voter in 15 because we knew that even though we may have to invest in growing our party to keep up, we thought that, it was well worth it to have a healthy democracy with improved ballot access. So with improved voter access, rather. So we just urge you to move these bills forward to allow us to get to that safe harbor compromise that the Secretary of State intended when the 2015 law was passed.
Thank you.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Sal Peralta. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Independent Party of Oregon in favor of Senate Bills 1501 and 1599. I would like to echo the testimony that's been given today. I do disagree a little bit with Mr. Taylor's characterization that the absence of these would hold parties harmless for the upcoming election cycle, because the denominator for major and minor party maintenance is going to be set at the 2016 election. And so that gives us a number certain and could threaten, as Sammy pointed out, the ballot access for the Working Families Party and other political parties, including the Independent Party of Oregon. I'm going to be really brief in my testimony. I just want to call attention to how the voting system, how party registration has shifted with Motor Voter based on the statistics that the Secretary of State has reported so far. Prior to the adoption of Motor Voter, 75% of Oregon voters who were registering were joining a political party. Under the Motor Voter system, 9% of Oregon voters are joining a political party. That creates a significant problem for ballot access for major and minor political parties going forward. This legislation gives us one legislative session to fix that. And so in addition to passing these two bills, I would also encourage this committee or the Secretary of State's office to put together a task force or a work group. I don't think any legislation is needed for that, to bring together the political parties, maybe some election law experts, to discuss ballot access to both the primary ballot and the general election ballot under Motor Voter, because it really has changed the world in terms of how political parties will maintain their ballot access and qualify going forward. And to give you an example of how things have changed, prior to Motor Voter, 40% of all registered voters were members of the Democratic Party. Under Motor Voter, that number is below 5%. So this doesn't just affect the small parties. It affects the big parties as well. And I think the legislature should take some steps to at least start asking questions and really work to address this. And with that, I'll end. Thank you.
Questions?
Mm-hmm. Chair Williamson, just briefly, if all the legislature did was fix the typo and get us through the 2016 session, you would have the 2017 legislative session to then address anything you wanted to before any parties would be imperiled. If you pass both of these bills as amended, you will get the political parties through 2016 election and the 2018 election. That will give the legislature both the 2017 session, the 2018 short session, the 2019 long session to do any adjustments. So that, but with this compromise, you are buying yourself a little more time.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Boyle.
Yeah, I want to thank all of you for being here, and Secretary of State's office for coordinating and managing this fix, which I think is equitable. And I would say, to follow up on Mr. Peralta's statements, not only does this give the legislature time to see what fixes need to be made, but it also gives parties not only the opportunity, but I would say the responsibility to explain to newly registered voters why they should be a member of this party. I mean, my hope is that we do have more than two parties. I think that that would be much more reflective of our population. And with as many non-affiliated voters as we have, I think it's incumbent upon the legislature to look at how do we include those non-affiliated voters in the primary process in a real way. So I think that there is both great opportunity and responsibility, not just for the legislature, not just for the Secretary of State, but also for parties in general. And I'm very, very glad that we're holding this out till 2018, because it's not fair that individual parties, whether major or minor, who've worked really hard to get where they are, be unfairly impacted with a new process.
I'm not sure if that was a question, but if
it's a comment.
Representative Hoyle, Chair Williamson, if I can just respond to that briefly, I completely agree with you. The caveat that I would make is that especially the smallest minor parties in the state really don't have the financial resources to do the kinds of voter registration that would be needed in order to maintain their ballot access through the, you know, using this current method. Dropping from 75% of registered voters signing up with a political party to 9% is a big deal, and it's especially a big deal for parties that don't have millions of dollars to transfer between committees around the country. Our party, I think, is going to be fine, but I really do have concerns for the Working Families Party, the Progressive Party, the Constitution Party. Several parties are legitimately threatened. Thank you.
Yeah, and one last comment. And yes, you're right. And for the Independent Party, as you are a new major party, transitioning from how you manage in a minor party to a major party that is more inclusive and that is more representative and that has more people, I think you should be offered the time to move from that one place to the other, and it would be unfair to penalize you when you're just getting to that place.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not a fan of motor voter, and I doubt I ever will be, but that's another discussion. But my feeling about passing laws or making decisions is that you need to live with the outcome of that. I don't think that we were made to expect we would have to come in and do a major cleanup for anybody, because we were told that this bill was going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm just kind of amazed that, first of all, we didn't think beforehand that something like this would happen. And then I'm interested by the fact that we're supposedly here to clean it up as well. You know, I'm not a great party guy. I'm not here to promote my party or hurt my party, either one. It's not a big issue with me. But living with outcomes is. And making decisions has consequences. So I may wind up supporting this today, but it's just interesting to me that we were sold that this was a magnificent thing. It was going to be good for everyone, although some didn't believe that. And now we're being asked to jump in and do, as Mr. Taylor says, make some adjustments. And I guess that's a long way to get into a question to Mr. Taylor. In your words, what kind of adjustments would need to be made here to make this something that supposedly works for everybody?
Chair Williamson, Representative Wilson, thank you for that question. And I want to say, first off, we expected in 2015 that there may be an impact on political parties in the 2016 election. And that's why Section 9 of the Oregon Motor Voter Bill sought to press the pause button through that first election. And but for the typo, we would have accomplished that. And we came back in this short session to try to correct that typo, to really just fulfill the original legislative intent behind that bill. And in the Senate, in their wisdom, they felt that we should extend that pause through the 2018 election. And from our perspective, that compromise makes sense as long as it's good for all of the parties. The same line is drawn for everybody through 2018. And if that's the compromise that's necessary to get the typo fixed, then we are in favor of that compromise. Now, your question about when the legislature comes back in 2017 and 2019, what other adjustments might they make due to the advent of motor voter? time will tell. I think Mr. Peralta and the other parties might say, well, we've had a couple of election cycles. We're still below the legislatively required thresholds to maintain party status. You need to extend us further, or you need to change those calculations so that we still qualify. And those would be questions that the legislature could address in those subsequent legislative sessions.
Thank you.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you all for being here. I just want to get a little political geek on for a second, if I could, perhaps with Mr. Taylor, I'm not sure. So to review, the way that we set the numbers for parties, it's based on the number of voters in the most recent gubernatorial election. Is that correct?
Chair Williamson, Representative Smith-Warner, there's actually three different ways you can qualify. There's two ways you can qualify to achieve minor party status, and then there's another calculation that's done to see if you achieve major party status. Those calculations are done at different times and are based on different thresholds, and we'd be happy to give you more information on that, but it's complicated, and Representative Wilson, that might be something that the legislature wants to look at in future sessions as well.
I bet it will. Thank you.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Thank you. And so those, basically we're kind of putting a pause on any of those computations until after the 2018 elections?
Correct.
Thank you.
Chair Williams and members of the committee, one point that hasn't been made is that as in addition to the increased numbers coming back from motor voter registrations that are happening that are ongoing moving forward, they will also be adding in entirely non-affiliated voters from 2014 and 2015, which really will, in addition, you know, the pool is already being diluted. As I mentioned, previously 75% of people were registering with a political party. Now it's 9%. That's the number going forward. But for 2014 and 2015, that is the universe of those people who are being brought in is entirely people who had the opportunity to register to vote at the DMV and who didn't. And my assumption is that the very high percentage of those, even higher than the 86% who are not returning cards today to register with the party or opt out, an even higher percentage of those that come back are not going to be engaging with that system. To the question related to major versus minor party status and calculations, I think that one of the things that the legislature should consider in future sessions is whether the distinction major versus minor party really continues to make sense for the state of Oregon, and perhaps there are fairer ways to encourage greater participation with the smaller parties by opening up the primary process to those parties. But that's a conversation for another day and one that I very much hope this committee is willing to engage in.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments for the panel? All right, thank you very much. With that, I'm gonna close the public hearing on 1501 and on 1599 and open a work session on 1501A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1501A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved Senate Bill 1501A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. Carrier will be Representative Hoyle. I will close the work session and open a work session on 1599A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1599A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved Senate Bill 1599A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. Carrier will be Representative Hoyle. I will close the work session on that. Yeah. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1595.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1595 permits administration of affirmation to witnesses in legislative proceedings. There's an emergency clause on this measure. This measure comes to you to make it clear in statute that you can take an oath or affirm that you will tell the truth should you be asked to be sworn in prior to giving testimony before the legislature. It just makes it very explicit for those people who are more comfortable affirming that they're held to the same perjury standard as if they were to take the oath. but does not require them to in any way feel or violate their religious beliefs.
All right. We're in work session.
Madam Chair, move Senate Bill 1595 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved Senate Bill 1595 with a do pass to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. This is the only change.
Correct.
To the current rule.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Any other discussion? Are there any objections? Oh, sorry. Representative Smith Warner. Okay. We'll call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Putman?
Aye.
Representative Kennemer?
Aye.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Smith Warner?
No.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hoyle?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gillen?
Excused.
Chair Williamson?
Aye. Motion passes. We will figure out the carrier. I'm going to close the work session, and we are going to stand at ease for a couple of minutes to make it to 3:30.
Ah, 2 minutes.
Thank you, everyone. We are back. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1573A and invite up Dave Honeycutt.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1573A requires city to annex territory without vote upon receipt of petition for annexation submitted by all owners of land and territory, provided territory is 1, included within urban growth boundary of city or metro, 2, is or will be subject to acknowledged comprehensive plan of city, 3, at least one plot or parcel in territory is contiguous to city limits or is separated by only public right-of-way or body of water, and 4, proposal conforms to all requirements of city ordinances, provides the territory to be annexed, includes additional territory necessary to provide infrastructure and services for development or annexed territory at density equal to average residential density, declares emergency effective upon passage. There is a no revenue, and a fiscal statement was issued on a version of the measure, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of Senate Bill 1573A. This bill deals with the sensitive, touchy land use issue of voter annexations, and what we're doing with this bill is addressing the situation where land has previously been brought into the urban growth boundary. It's hard in Oregon under our land use system to bring land inside the urban growth boundary. Our land use system has created urban growth boundaries, and the theory behind our system is that land inside the boundary is available for development, and in exchange for that, land outside the boundary is kept for its rural uses, predominantly agriculture and forestry. This bill deals only with land that is already inside the urban growth boundary. The process for bringing that land in is difficult and expensive for both the cities and for the state and for the various people that are interested in the process. It's time-consuming, and there are multiple opportunities. It's a very open-ended process, and it was designed that way so that the public has input. We have hundreds of hours of hearing, opportunities for appeal, and the like, so that when land is brought inside the boundary, it is fully vetted. Once that land is inside the boundary, it's then available under our system for development. And this bill addresses a problem that was created quite some time ago by a Oregon Supreme Court decision. In order for our system, our land use system, to work, it's predicated on predictability. And the people inside the boundary that own land inside that boundary are, under our system, entitled to develop that property. When you're inside the boundary but outside the city limits, it's usually impossible to develop that property because you need to go into the city limits in order for the city to be able to provide you with water and sewer and other needed infrastructure. And so the difficulty that a property owner would have and a city would have when they bring land inside the boundary is ensuring that it's annexed in order for the sewer and water to be provided. What this bill does is it says if you are inside the boundary but outside the city limits and 100% of the property owners want to be annexed. We're not trying, this bill does not try and force somebody who is outside the city limits to forcibly annex into the city. It's triggered by a petition filed by the property owner saying, I would like to be annexed into the city. You meet all of the city criteria for annexation. You obtain a city council approval for approving your annexation. And you, as the property owner, of course, are willing to pay for all of the needed infrastructure. In that situation, and in that situation only, the city council brings you in, and they do not send the annexation, their annexation decision to the public for a vote. There are somewhere between 30 and 35 cities in the state of Oregon that have charter language in their charter that require a vote on annexation. The problem with the annexation voting, as I said, is it completely eliminates the predictability that our land use system is founded upon by turning an infrastructure decision into a thumbs up or thumbs down public decision on yay or nay on a vote. And that's inconsistent with our land use planning system and makes our land use planning system more difficult to function. So what this bill does is it carries out the provisions of the state land use planning system, says once you're inside the boundary, you want to come in. Again, we're not forcing people in. You want to come in. You get the city council approval, and you're willing to pay for all the services. Then you come in. Once the city council approves, that decision is final and subject, of course, to appeal. It just doesn't go to the voters for a thumbs up or thumbs down. So with that, I would ask the committee to support this bill. It's a good bill. It's long overdue, and it really carries out the function of our state land use planning system.
Great. Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm invited Peggy Lynch, Aaron Doyle, and Richard Reed.
I'm going to go ahead and go first. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. And while the League represents all 242 cities where legislation has the potential to disrupt our home rule authority and the governance selected by the people within their charters, we have to step forward to oppose that legislation. In this case, there are 34 cities that we've been able to identify that have a voting requirement, cities as diverse as Oregon City, Corvallis, Grants Pass, Salem, Rogue River, to name a few of them. And there's a lot of controversy even within those cities about whether or not voting on annexation should be allowed. But that is a decision that the citizens have said, this is what we want, this is the authority we demand, and they put it in the charter, which is the governance structure that they've decided for themselves. We track these votes as one of the things that we track as a league. Between 2008 and 2013, there were 152 votes on annexation that were held, and only 20 failed. Even in the city that has had the most failed annexation votes has a record of at least half the time saying yes and half the time saying no. And to this indicates to me that the citizens that have demanded this right and this form of governance are not always opposed to annexation. They just merely wish to control the size and shape of the parcels of land coming into the city. And while it's stated that we should be doing that, the citizens should be participating in the comprehensive land use process and making that decision then, there is no option for a city to say, we don't want a 20-year urban growth boundary. We're required by law to have those. We can't say we're just going to be a non-growth community and therefore inform folks to the edge of the town, you're going to stay in your protected, usually natural resource status, or you know, we are a city that wants to have robust growth, and that's a decision that they can make, and they can set that 20-year UGB. We have one option, and that is a 20-year urban growth boundary. As far as infrastructure payments, a lot of times this is a concern about bringing on 100 acres into an infrastructure system. It doesn't pay for itself automatically. Even the cities that charge system development charges often don't charge 100% capacity development. They charge a portion thereof. So the voters are making a decision about how the monies that their city collects are spent, and that includes the portion that the city subsidizes to extend infrastructure beyond where current growth exists. Finally, it's the League's position that the charters are our constitutions. It's the same as the Oregon State Constitution. And while we might not always love the provisions our citizens place inside those charters, that is the governance that our city elected officials are bound to be governed by. There is a way to remove any requirement within a city charter, and that's exactly what Scappoose did this past year, is the city council went back to the citizens and said, you know, this has not proven to be an effective and efficient means for governance of growth in this city. Can we remove this from the charter? And they made their case to the voters, and the voters said, you know what, city officials, you're correct. We should remove this from the charter. And that's how these provisions should be managed and taken out, not with a legislative decision that in this instance, the voters' opinion doesn't count, even though they've stated very clearly that that's what they want. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you.
I'm Peggy Lynch, the League of Women Voters of Oregon. League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. The League has numerous positions related to citizen participation and access. We support city and county home rule and have always advocated that local citizens have the right to bring matters before their local constituents on a variety of issues. We have also long supported our statewide land use planning system with local implementation. It is because of these long-standing positions that we ask that you reject Senate Bill 1573A. The bill requires a city to annex territory under certain circumstances, whether or not they have the services to support that annexation, and whether or not the city's long-term annexation plans fit into this particular property's annexation at this time. We understand that special districts are often the service provider of choice for areas within the metro urban growth boundary, which is much different than the rest of the state. Washington County even created an enhanced sheriff's patrol district to increase policing in large urban unincorporated areas, and an enhanced road maintenance district to address transportation needs such as sidewalks, bike lanes, and speed bumps to slow down traffic in these unannexed but urban areas. But that's not true in much of the state. Cities themselves more commonly provide basic services, and you heard that from Mr. Honeycutt. And there are only county-level services in these urban growth boundary areas in most of them. Cities have differing urban growth boundary sizes, meaning that there can be choices as to which land should be annexed under which timeline. The bill preempts these local charter provisions, including those where local citizens have determined it is in their best interest to have a vote before annexing property into their cities. Yes, these votes can sometimes be a mechanism to limit growth in a city, but more often it allows for a broad citywide conversation on how to pay for the infrastructure, such as water, sewer, and roads, and other public services, such as police and fire, should that property become a part of a city. The bill, I was appreciative of Mr. Honeycutt's comment that the property owner is going to be paying for this infrastructure, but the bill does not require that the property owner fund the needed infrastructure, nor these important public services. Not all cities have systems development charges, as you heard from Ms. Doyle. There is no legal requirement that developers must pay for that infrastructure. Depending on the size of the property annex, there may be a need for more schools. All of these conversations occur when an annexation is considered in a public process. This bill doesn't even require a public hearing before the city approves annexation applications, although the amended bill does allow it if cities have that process in their annexation ordinances. The bill might require that services be provided in an illogical manner that would be more costly than an orderly growth plan. Yes, there is intended under our planning system to be a 20-year land supply in an urban growth boundary. Actually, under the new process that cities can choose, that timeline is now 14 years, which frankly is a better conversation because it means the conversation may happen more often and more regularly. But the current system does not require that properties come into cities at the whim of developers or property owners. The current system assumes that local governments and their citizens have local control to determine their destiny. It is because of these concerns that we ask that you vote no. And now I'm going to take off my button and say, on a personal note, I have been involved as a volunteer in the land use planning arena since 1972. For 30 plus years, I lived in Washington County, and I helped develop the first community plan on my dining room table with my neighbors, with the fellow businesses around there. I helped facilitate the urban service agreement between Portland and Beaverton, between Beaverton and Hillsboro, and the various special districts. This issue is not a new one to me, nor is the issue of affordable housing. We are thrilled by the money that is being put into this budget to help with affordable housing issues. In the 1990s, I helped set up the Speakers Bureau to help communities understand the need for affordable housing in the Portland metro area. I have worked with Mr. Chandler to increase the public involvement in the comp plan process, but DLCD's local government grant budget has shrunk the money used to engage citizens. I have worked with Mr. Van Landingham to encourage rulemaking on Goal 10. Unfortunately, we were not able to convince the rest of LCDC, nor to get the money from the legislature to be able to do that. So what I hear today is that communities should vote on comp plans. Anybody hear of Damascus? Many cities in this state have not had a reason to expand their UGBs. There's been no reason to have that issue before the voters. So they haven't had the opportunity to have a conversation about which land should come in or could not. You've heard the statistics about the 152 and 20. Because there were community decisions before the vote, and that's why many of those were successful. If the development community wants to take away this right, they need to go to the individual cities and make their case, as was done in Scappoose. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Richard Reed, co-chair of Oregon Communities for Voice and Annexations, and I'd like to start by just thanking Peggy for all of her persistent and pioneering work in land use here in the state. It's been pretty impressive and pretty needed. I do want to say that no one wants to return Oregon to the days before Senate Bill 100, when wanton real estate development threatened land markets, property rights, and cities throughout the state. But that is what Senate Bill 1573A will do. Most of the concerns that arose when Senate Bill 100 was discussed are still with us. In discussions about land use, who speaks for productive land, heritage land, recreational land, land for rare and unusual plants and animals, land recognized around the world for its beauty? This bill, Senate Bill 1573, is the land speculator's dream bill because it limits citizen involvement, so none of those concerns will get their due. And Senate Bill 1573 attacks city charters, specifically in communities where citizens claim their right to express legitimate concerns at the ballot box. Section 2 makes no mistake, this is a direct attack on city charters of only cities where taxpayers exercise their right to vote on annexations. As such, Senate Bill 1573 also attacks not only home rule, but also Oregon land use planning goal number 1, citizen involvement. The bill takes a wrecking ball to property tax limitations and their fiscal restraint on growth for the sake of growth. It is strictly a market-based, so the only thing that matters is getting land under city control where city taxpayers must pay for improving the land. Senate Bill 1573 invites major unintended consequences. For example, it says territory included within an urban growth boundary adopted by the city or metro. It refers to the urban growth boundary. But recent LCDC reform clarifies urban growth boundary expansion for cities. So Senate Bill 1573 clouds that reform before it can take effect. Section 22B talks about this: the territory upon annexation of the territory will be subject to the acknowledged comprehensive plan of the city. This bill recognizes that cities have comprehensive plans, but does not respect those same comprehensive plans and forces them to add in whatever annexation comes along. Senate Bill 1573 does not care if cities have the resources to provide legally required infrastructure. Measures 5 and 50 limit property tax revenues available for real estate development, and how many properties are subject to those limitations in how many cities across the state. The bill also says at least one lot or parcel within the territory has to be contiguous to the city limits. And with this, Senate Bill 1573 may reopen settled law regarding island annexations. It definitely opens the floodgate for any size of territory, even though only one lot or parcel is contiguous to the city. Section 3 requires any additional territory under ORS 222 that must be annexed in order to locate infrastructure, right-of-way, services. Just like the one lot or parcel rule, this also opens the floodgate to any additional territory, regardless of the city funding capacity or the will of the taxpayers. The bill also specifies population density that's equal or to the average residential density within the annexing city. This focus on average residential density disregards whether the city has the tax base to fund any more density, whether it be average or not. And it disregards the range of real estate development impacts on people's lives that are triggered by density. Finally, there's no emergency. There really is no emergency. Some Oregon economic indicators are improving, but improvement is not true for many Oregon cities. How can there be no revenue impact statement regarding this bill? After decades of development like that proposed in Senate Bill 1573, many Oregon communities cannot afford to fund long overdue repairs and maintenance on infrastructure. How can there be no fiscal impact? The bill forces cities to take on not only more land, but also the requirement to provide new infrastructure at a time when cities are most vulnerable. Only voting on annexations gives taxpayers and their cities a voice in annexations that may either encourage community-centric growth or discourage land speculation and sprawl. Senate 1573 wipes out that voice. Please do not turn back the clock to the days before Senate Bill 100. Please allow citizens and taxpayers to continue to express their concerns at the ballot box. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. And for anyone who hasn't put testimony in, OLIS is open. Aaron will be taking additional testimony if folks want to put something in the record that's not already in there.
Yeah, can we just stand at ease for a moment?
Yeah. Back on. We are in work session, as a reminder to all of you, on Senate Bill 1573A. Senator Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1573A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved Senate Bill 1573A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair. this is, oddly enough, one of the most difficult votes of the entire session. Because it pits a couple of things that are very dear to me. Number one is home rule, and that is very dear to me. And also in that is an issue of property rights and the expectation to be able to do what you want to with your property. I'm going to give a courtesy yes today. I expect to vote the opposite direction on the floor. The reason I'm not voting against it in committee is I am not fully settled in my thoughts about the use of your property in a situation like this. And so I want just a little bit longer to affirm what I believe will be my decision. So I will give a courtesy yes today.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard the presentations of those who opposed the bill and recognize that conditions in other parts of the state may be very different from the conditions that I'm familiar with. I will tell you that my hometown, Eugene, has a very strict process that's used for annexation that deals with the issues that were raised in the presentations in a way that's effective, has a very effective process for involving the public in the conversations about annexation and other issues of importance to city planning, and a very active citizenry, very actively involved in all of these discussions. It already does not have a rule requiring an election to be held for the process of annexation. And it hasn't, to my knowledge, for at least for a long time, maybe ever. It is very possible to do city, to do planning, to manage annexation, to do it in a way that's that the public is highly involved without holding an election. I know it may not be part of the custom in other parts of the state, but it can be done, and it is being done. And I think nobody would accuse Eugene of being a place that is out there busy growing rapidly and gobbling up land that's not appropriate for annexation.
Thank you. Any other comments? Eamon, can you call the roll, please? Thank you.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kettemer?
No.
Representative Rayfield?
No.
Representative Smith Warner?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hoyle?
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Excused.
Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Madam Chair, out of courtesy to a colleague who is not here, I'll change my no vote to aye, but do plan to vote no on the floor.
Thank you. All right, so motion passes. Carrier will be Representative Helm, and I will close the work session. Aaron is going to be for the good of the order.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that completes our work for today. We are not currently scheduled to meet tomorrow, but please stay tuned.
Yes, yeah, stay tuned.
All right. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Okay.
We're adjourned.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.